Sending all my love and strength to Scott Hall. Kick out, bad guy.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Okay, kids, this week's a big one. We got Brian Breaker on the show. Brian's a pro wrestler and a podcaster as he hosts Breaker and Bane's Power Hour, the TB Toycast with Travis Fowler, and You Know It's Fake Right. Where I gotta say, you might want to check that episode out this week, where yours truly is his guest. I'm stoked to have him on, I'm honored to have him on, and I get to talk to Brian right now.
Brian, thanks for joining me.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on. I've been a big-time listener of your show, so I was excited to be able to join you here.
I appreciate that. That means a lot, man. I could say the same for you and your shows, and it's always awesome to have, well, I guess I can say it now, I've got my second professional wrestler on the show.
Hey, I'm happy to be on here, man. I believe I'm followed up by, I'm number two behind Adam Bomb, so that's pretty good company to keep.
Yeah, big fans of both of you guys. Obviously, you're putting out awesome content on not one, but three podcasts every week. I always make it a point to get all three of those going, and we'll get into that. But I just wanted to start off by kind of asking you where you were born and raised.
Yeah, so I was born and raised around Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's kind of where I'm from. I live in a small suburb called Sand Springs. That's where I live now. That's where I've been most of my life, with the exception of when I traveled around, because I actually moved to Missouri to pursue pro wrestling full time. And that, of course, led me to Tampa, Florida for a little bit. And, you know, I did some traveling all over and stuff like that. But yeah, this is kind of home base where I'm from, right here in Oklahoma.
What was the wrestling scene like when you were, you know, your earliest memories? Was that a hotbed for wrestling, or how, kind of talk a little bit about how you discovered wrestling in the first place?
Sure. I've always been a fan. I think, like most people, it's one of those things where I can't pinpoint an exact moment when I found it. It was like, oh, I love wrestling. I've always been a fan. When I was young, I'm talking probably 4 or 5, I actually went to a WWF at the time live event here. And it was headlined by Dusty Rhodes and the Big Boss Man, which could pretty well tell you that that's like a C-level town for the WWF. Like, there was the Ultimate Warrior crew and the Hulk Hogan crew, and we had the Dusty Rhodes crew, which was C-level, which is kind of weird because Dusty was such a big name, but in the WWF not so much. And but, you know, to me, like, it didn't matter. Just seeing wrestling live was the coolest thing ever. And, you know, pretty much when I found it, I actually found wrestling through figures, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. I had my grandmother got me a bag full of old beat up LJNs, and I had me and two cousins. We had to split all these up, and I mean, they were beat to death and, you know, scuffed up, as you can imagine, with old LJNs, but it didn't matter. I loved them. And then, of course, once I correlated those to the wrestling that was on television, I was just an instant fan. And, you know, in those days in the 80s, wrestling was on, but it was always like 1 hour shows. So, or Saturday night's main event specials, but I was watching as often as I could, as much as I could, renting tapes, whatever I could to watch more wrestling. I loved it. So yeah. I wouldn't say wrestling was a hotbed here. I mean, I guess back in the early 80s, Mid South was very big in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but that was quite a bit before my time.
Gotcha. Was there kind of like, I always tell people here in the Bay Area, I grew up going to the Cow Palace in South San Francisco. I guess nationally people say San Francisco, but technically it's not actually in San Francisco. But that was kind of historically going all the way back to like Pat Patterson and Ray Stevens and some of the real legends of wrestling. In the territory days, it was a big deal there. And then later in the golden era with Hulk Hogan, the boom came through there and they taped shows there, and WCW later on had pay-per-views there. Was there kind of a historical arena out where you grew up to watch shows?
Oh, we have like what was at the time called the Tulsa Convention Center. That's where we went in the 90s and up and through the 2000s. Around 2010, I believe, we got the BOK Center, which is a much bigger venue. and that's where they do all the WWE events nowadays. But the Tulsa Convention Center wasn't anything spectacular. It was small enough. This is a fun fact for you. It was such a small arena when SmackDown came through, they couldn't use the ramp when they had the Big Fist logo. So like it was one of the, like every now and then you'd see that where like the set was just too tall for the building to have the ramp. So it would always just be built onto the ground. Tulsa was one of those. It just wasn't a big venue, but I mean, we have a smaller, like we have a fairgrounds pavilion building out here that I went to a few times. They did some WCW house shows there back in the day. So, but again, nothing huge, but it didn't matter. Like just seeing live wrestling. And then, you know, there was some independents that were relatively successful for the time period of the early 2000s or late 90s, but just seeing live wrestling was always so special to me. So I loved it back in the day.
Yeah. One of the things I think is missing in wrestling, at least for me, is, you know, the Cow Palace had, well, it's still there. I'm talking about it like it's been bulldozed, but it's got a personality. In fact, that was a cool Easter egg you just shared with me. I'll share one with you. On Saturday night's main event, for people who aren't familiar with the Cow Palace, kind of in the opening of that show, they would show the Honky Tonk Man doing his finishing move, the reverse neck breaker move. That's at the Cow Palace, and you can kind of see the curtains and everything in the background. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah, and so today it's just kind of like, you know, we have the San Jose Arena, we have the Oakland Arena, but they all look exactly the same to me. They all feel and look the same, and maybe that's by design, but I really like that uniqueness of the Cow Palace and buildings like that. So I always like to ask if people have had a place like that or if it was just, you know, launched right into the cookie cutter arena stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like nowadays when you watch live wrestling, all the arenas do look the same. And to me, that there was something special about Madison Square Garden because that one, you know, aisle way, if they didn't use it for the entrance, it was kind of in the middle of the shot. Like, yeah, it looked like the garden. And I think that's something that's missing today because now, like, I know there was a thing there for a while where the WWE was actually very against using the name of the town if it was like very NWA heavy, like Greensboro, North Carolina, for instance, comes to mind, where they didn't even announce that's where Monday Night Raw was being held because they thought, oh, that's too Southern. And I'm just like, but it all looks the same. What does it matter? You know, it's, I don't know. I think having those different type of buildings does add a fun element to it for sure. Like the Hammerstein Ballroom, right? For ECW, like it has its own, like you said, own personality, has its own look to it.
Yeah. Whenever there's an event there, you know, it's there. And, right. Good call on the Madison Square Garden, man. I mean, that's how could that not add to the ambiance of the presentation? You know, like that Royal Rumble shot with the car thing parked in that dead on entrance, like you're talking about. That's iconic. Yeah. I mean, you can't.
Well, I remember WrestleMania 10 with the X where it would open up. Like that was super fun.
Yes. Yes. Good call. Yeah, that was the garden. I mean, hopefully that's always there and everything doesn't transition over to the newer arenas.
Yeah, hopefully not.
Then you got into wrestling figures, you said, by getting the LJNs. Was that that was kind of your introduction to figures and wrestling all in one shot?
Pretty much, yeah. Like I said, I was into it so young, it's hard for me to remember all the specific details. But I remember getting the LJNs, and like I said, they were beat up and mauled. I vividly remember my Greg Valentine, like half of his face was bitten off by a dog. Yeah, because like my grandmother, she was a big flea market garage sale person, and so anything that she was gonna buy, if it was a deal, she was gonna buy it. It didn't matter. And so I'm sure this bag of LJNs was like a buck or something. But yeah, they were beaten up, drawn on with ink pens, but it didn't matter to me because they were so fun. And then I started getting a few new ones, but I was born in 85, so they were kind of wrapping up by the time I was available to buy them. I do remember getting. The very first LJN brand new I ever got was Jesse Ventura. And that was really cool because it's like my mom thought it was Hulk Hogan. So did I. And then we realized like, oh, no, it's Jesse the Body. But yeah, there was something about the LJNs. They were special. And I know like you are a big fan. I know Jeff and Scott love them. I think most people do because there's something special about those. But for me, it really went full circle once the Hasbros hit because – I told this story before, but I remember, you know, as a kid, we don't know anything like that. The internet's nothing; it's not even existing yet. So you found out about new toys when you showed up at the toy store or the toy aisle, whatever it was at. And I was at a Walmart. My mom was actually getting her oil changed at a Walmart of all places, which I don't advise that. But we were there, and the automotive section was pretty close to the toys at this particular Walmart. And I remember from the distance seeing an end cap, and I saw that blue card and that iconic WWF logo. And I was just like, ooh, and I ran down there and I found the Hasbros, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I have to have one of these. And I knew I couldn't talk my mom into the whole set, but I could probably talk her into one, which I was able to. And that day I picked up my very first Hasbro, which was Macho Man Randy Savage. And a reason I probably bought that one and not like Hogan or Warrior is I don't think they had Hogan and Warrior at the time, but Macho Man was obviously a favorite too. His Series 1 Hasbro is one of the most iconic figures, I think. So I was happy with it. And of course I get it opened up and I realize, oh, he has the action. His arms come down fast and, you know, and all that stuff. Like the Hasbros were all known for their action. So it was a totally different type of figure, but it didn't matter. I loved it.
Yeah, the Hasbro seems to be pretty commonly heralded as the favorite line, it seems like, these days. And I think a lot of the LJN, you know, if you weren't alive at that time, if I guess what I'm trying to say is when those first came out, it was brand new. Like, wow, there's right. wrestling figures. This is the first people. I mean, we talked about it earlier. The Remcos were out first in the States, but it was kind of the first line for the WWF. So it was something brand new. And the product that was out kind of matched the figures that were out. And so if you weren't alive in that time or close to it, you know, the further we get away from that, the harder it is for, you know, a 15-year-old kid today to pick up an Andre the Giant and go, like, how was this ever a good product, I guess, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I think everything's a product of the time, right? I mean, you look at action figures of back in the day, the articulation, whatever it might have been, it's totally different than today. But I've talked with Jeff about this from Fully Posable a few times. It's like, I think a lot of times we liked wrestling figures because that's what they had, right? Like we liked Jack's bone crunching action, not because they were the greatest figures or anything, but that's what they made. So if that's what they make, that's what we're going to buy. No different than maybe Bendham's or whatever. Titantron, yeah. Live, me and you did a recording earlier and we talked about those not being the greatest figures. Well, it's not that, you know, they weren't great, but like I told you, I was like, that's the first time we got Kurt Angle. It's the first time we got the Hardy Boys or Chris Jericho. So at least in the WWF style. So that sometimes I think is what drives the collecting, right? Like, so I know when Mattel took over in 2010, people were so into Jax at this point. It's like, I can't start over, but lo and behold, everyone did because they were putting out great product. And I'm sure if, you know, Mattel for some reason ever loses that license and another company gets it, people will be mad and be like, I'm not collecting these, but they eventually probably will, because that's what we do. We're collectors. And there's times you probably lull in collecting and don't buy stuff, but I think we all eventually always come back to it because it's a hobby.
Yeah, good point. Well said. I think there's always a hook, right? So with sure. with the Titantron Lives, as bad as those were, when they dropped that first ever real scan technology, that was a game changer, man. So I'm back in. And then
right.
with Mattel, it was like you said, I wasn't buying those for I don't know how many of the first series, but then I think it was like they came out with the Macho Man and I was like, oh, dude, that's a game changer. I got to get back in. So there's always, if Mattel ever loses a line someday, there'll be some new thing and it'll pull me back in, I'm sure.
That's the thing about collecting is like even Jazzwares, they launched AEW. I was really excited for all of those. And I still am collecting those, but I know that I'll hit a lull at some point. And I'll be like, I don't really need any more of these, because I think that's how collecting goes at times. And you get a collection and you feel like you've got everybody you need. So like, now what? There for a couple of years, I was really collecting Marvel Legends from Hasbro. And that line's incredible. But it got to a point, I'm like, who else do I need? Like, I've got a Wolverine. I don't need six Wolverines. You know, I don't need six Deadpools. I've got the guys I need. Like, I think I'm good. But usually like what always happens is they end up announcing something cool and you're like, oh, okay, I do kind of want that. And it kind of pulls you back in. That's the nature of collecting. We're never satisfied. It's never over. It's never complete. It's always just trying to get the next thing.
Yeah, well said, dude. There's always one more thing coming, and it's that constant battle between that and I'm running out of real estate, you know? It's not...
Yeah.
It's just how many rooms can you dedicate to your collection? And if you're sharing a living space with anyone, it's even harder and harder to quantify, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I've had that thought too. It's like, okay, I got this awesome figure. It's mint on card, so I can hang it on the wall or something, but it's like, it's got to be in the podcast room, right? You don't want that like in your living room probably. And I live by myself, but still, like, you know, if I were to ever bring a lady over for, you know, an evening, it's probably not the first thing I'd want her to show is like, hey, there's a mint on card He-Man, you know? But
yeah,
I mean, and that's the thing is like collecting in of itself up until honestly, Jeff and Scott launched Fully Posable. This was not ever something I ever really talked about publicly. I mean, I wouldn't shy away from the fact that I enjoyed figures, but I didn't really put it out there to too many people. I was a little bit more closed off about it.
Yeah, I definitely would fall into that same category. It's like, it's hard enough sometimes to tell people you watch wrestling or you go to wrestling, and then it's like, what do you mean you collect action figures? You're an adult. And it's like, well, yeah, but why does your wife or your mom collect those little, what are those things from the Hallmark store? The little,
oh yeah,
ceramic figurines, whatever. I forget what those, I was trying to come in with a strong point and I just botched the whole thing. But basically, people collect all kinds of stuff and it's like, well, who decides what's not cool enough or mature enough or whatever the gripe is? I don't even know, but.
Yeah, I think what it is if you're not into something, you can't really understand it, right? So you collect wrestling figures. So me and you immediately can connect on that. I equate it to this. Like I have known people that collect like coins or model cars and things like that. And I'm like, I have no desire to collect coins or model cars, but I can respect it because I like to collect figures. But on the other end of that, I've also met people in my personal life that spend tons of money at casinos and stuff or at the bar. And I'm like, I don't, and I've had those same people tell me like, I can't believe you buy that stuff. That's such a waste of money. And I'm like, I don't understand how you can look at me and say buying that figure is a waste of money when you blow several hundred dollars at a casino or go to a bar and end up with a several hundred dollar bar tab. Like it's money that we obviously can spend on stuff. Like if you're going to say that this is pointless, maybe you're right, but you're also wasting money on something else. So I don't understand the mindset of that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, or people that collect shoes, or I guess what you're saying is,
yeah,
we're not going to get a Instagram story from you on your stamp collection.
Probably not. You know, like I actively try to pay every bill online so I don't have to mail them in. But yeah, exactly. And at the same time, I wouldn't knock someone that had a stamp collection because it's like, oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And I've known guys that collect, I know a guy in my hometown here, he collects NES games and he's got all the NES games except like 7 or 8, including the high dollar ones. And he showed them to me one time. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. But again, I could see some people being like, why would you do that? Like, especially like these games that are expensive. Why would you do that? Well, that's the thing about collecting is if it's not something you're into, it will never make sense. To us, this makes all the sense in the world because I think sometimes that's where we get our joy, right? Like me and Travis Fowler, we do the TV Toycast and kind of how that started was honestly just me and him talking about toys and what we're finding and what's new and like him sending me pictures or me sending him pictures. And I'm like, man, we should do a podcast because that's basically what we're doing now. We're just not putting it out there for everyone to see. And so we launched that earlier in 2021 and it was a lot of fun. So that to me is like the whole crux of you find joy however you find it. And if other people don't understand it, that's okay. But that's why I never knock anyone that collects shoes or whatever, because I'm like, well, I collect action figures. What can I say to them? Do I collect shoes? No, I wear a pair of shoes till they're worn out. And then I get a new pair. That's kind of the circle, but I understand that's what they're into and everybody's different.
Yeah, I think for whatever reason, the wrestling figure stuff might be just kind of a microcosm of people's lack of understanding towards wrestling in the first place, which is, sure. You know, like I said, that's hard enough to explain or defend to people when you choose to muster up the strength to do so. But the figures is just like, okay, now it's on to another level. But yeah, I think you're right. I think people collect a wide variety of different things, and this just happens to be the one that you and I enjoy, I guess, right?
I think so. And, you know, I think there's times where I have gotten out of collecting, but I've never gotten out of looking at the toys, as, and that might be strange to someone who's not into it, but, you know, the whole time I was wrestling, pretty much, I didn't really collect, but like I never went into Target and didn't look at the action figures. I always did. And I think that's just because it's something that we're into, we're passionate about. And yeah, I wasn't buying anything, but I did always like to go look and see what they had and see if there was something new. Because it's just a fun thing to see all this new stuff as it comes out. So that will always be a favorite thing of mine, is just honestly just checking the toy aisle. And I think that's where, you know, Jeff and Scott, they call it their toy spotting. And that to me is like, man, I've never called it that, but I've always done this. You know, you're in Walmart, maybe you're buying groceries or you have to go buy one thing. You always go check the toy aisle. And I don't know. I think it's just it's a cool thing that this community shares. And like I was telling you off the air, one thing that I really loved about when they launched Fully Posable is like, I realized like, oh, there's a whole group of people that are just like me. Like, you know what I mean? That like to collect, like talking figures and building collections and all that stuff. It's a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, you know, when you go in the store, you always have to check the toy aisle. And I would add to that, in my moments where I've got the collection sickness a little bit worse, it's like I actively go around the house and go like, oh, we could use some crackers or whatever the thing is.
Got to find a reason to go.
Yeah, I'll just run down to Walmart and grab some. And it's kind of like a running joke. Like, yeah, sure. Like, you know, we know that you don't need that item or whatever
the thing is. Right.
Yeah. So was there a moment where you decided, I want to pursue this and get into actually being a professional wrestler that you remember? Or was it always in the back of your mind? Or how did that come about?
I always wanted to, but I think like most people, I didn't have a clue how to do it, right? Like, how do you become a pro wrestler? And so that was kind of a thing where I'm like, well, I don't have a clue. Well, at around 2000, this wrestling company was running shows out of a bowling alley, which you can't get any more independent wrestling than that. It was at a back room of a bowling alley here in Tulsa, but they actually had a pretty fun show. The small building they were in fit about, it was like a side building of the bowling alley, but the building fit about 300 people and it was full most of the time. Of course, wrestling was a lot hotter then, you know, with the Attitude Era and stuff. And so I would go to these shows and, you know, see them that they did a training school. They would talk about that. I'm like, oh, that's what I need to do. So I turn 18. I'm going to join the training school. And like anyone who's ever been involved in pro wrestling will know, a lot of indie companies kind of come and go. And that company shut down and reopened with a different name. And then that company shut down and reopened with a different name. So it's like always, there's always that stuff happening. And so that company's like fourth iteration or whatever it was reopened, and it was drawing like 15 people. It was not very well done. The talent pool had gone way down, but they were running shows once a week, I think, or something like that. And so I signed up for their school, which was not very well ran. Of course, at the time I didn't know that, because it's hard to know what you need out of a wrestling school, I guess, if you know nothing about the business. And I had no ins on anything, but I knew like it probably wasn't the right place. But at the same time, I was getting to be in a ring and I was kind of learning some stuff, so I didn't want to jinx that. I was like, oh, this is fun. Well, I show up one day and that school, like, there's nobody there. It was supposed to be a show that night, nobody's there. And so it's like, oh, I guess that's over, you know, kind of typical pro wrestling thing. So I'm looking online for a wrestling school and I'm trying to find a reputable one, even though I don't really know what that even means, I guess. But I'm looking online and I come across the Harley Race Wrestling Academy, and it was in Missouri, which is about a 4-hour drive from where I lived. I'm like, oh, that's not too far away. And obviously Harley Race was a very well-known name in pro wrestling, Hall of Famer, the whole deal. So I call the school and they tell me that they're having a camp coming up, and this is in 2006. And this camp is like a week-long training camp, and it costs $500. And if you go, you're going to get looked at by the WWE and Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan. And so I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. And it's being touted to me that like no other camps offer that, which is true. So I'm like, okay, I'm going. And so me and a friend actually signed up for this camp. We go down there for a week. The Japanese absolutely tortured us with conditioning and drills and all kinds of stuff. It was pretty rough camp, but it was also very eye-opening because two of the guys that were also at that camp were technically training us at this Tulsa organization that I was at. And they were probably the two worst guys at the camp, like far and away, like horrible. And I realized at that point, I'm like, the training here is not good. If I legitimately want to pursue this and actually get something going for myself in this industry, I need to go to a legitimate school to get trained like by someone who knows what they're talking about and has connections. And so I kind of, after that camp, made the decision, like, I need to go to Harley's Academy. So I kind of made plans to move up there. And my friend was going to come with me as well. He was all about it. And we were going to save money up and all this thing. And we made a tentative plan, like, let's move up this date. Well, that date rolls around. He's like, I need some more time. Okay. How about this date? Sure. That date rolls around. I need some more time. And finally, I just realized he's not going to do it. And so it kind of became like, I'm going to have to do this on my own. And that was a scary move, man, because I didn't know anybody. I'm moving to a town in an area I don't know. I don't know a soul. And I'm training to be a pro wrestler. It was one of the scariest moments of my life, but I was so glad that I did it. And, it was incredibly difficult. It was brutal. I remember calling my dad a couple of times, like, I don't know if I can do this. And he was like, well, he's like, here's the thing. He's like, if you pursue this and nothing happens, then at least you tried. But if you leave now, for sure nothing will happen. And that always stuck with me because I was like, man, he's right. Like, if I leave now, who's to say? But at least if I give it a legitimate shot, I'll know. And my career didn't go like I wasn't super successful or anything, but I did get to do some cool stuff. So I do get to hang my hat on that. But yeah, that's where I ended up in early or mid 2007 is when I started at the Academy and stayed there until I got signed to NXT in 2012.
Yeah, man, you got guts. I can relate to your friend that was dragging his feet and ended up not going, because I'm a lot closer to that guy than I am you. way back when I had contacted that APW program out here, and
Roland Alexander, right?
Yeah, I talked to Roland, and I was never in wrestling. I didn't know what a work was or any of that kind of stuff, but I just knew it didn't feel right. Like, just talking to the guy, I just felt like,
yeah,
this is a used car salesman, and sure, I'm afraid he's gonna steal. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I just was like, I got numb, scared, like, I'm going down the wrong path. I'm backing up, and I turned around. And because as a wrestling fan, of course, being a younger guy at the time, I thought, oh, I can do that. Well, nah, probably not. But
there's a lot more to it than just the in-ring stuff too. Like, what people don't understand, like you were talking about kind of maybe getting sold some stuff. The reason I went to that first camp for Harley was I was told the WWE is looking to sign people from this camp. And I'm like, well, I don't have any experience. Well, that's what they want. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I could go get signed. Yeah. Like, that's so naive on my part, but that's kind of what I was sold. And I think that's the inside part of pro wrestling that people don't always get is I'm so skeptical today because of pro wrestling. Like,
yeah,
there's a phrase that we all had. It was like, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see, because this is a funny story to tell you. I was told by Harley's wife in 2008 that we had just gotten a deal and the school was going to be featured in on reality television, a reality television show about the Harley Race Academy. I was like, wow. Really? And she's like, oh yeah, it's a done deal. He signed the contract today. And I'm like, wow. She goes, so you need to go talk to your boss at work and tell them that the cameras are going to be following you around. I'm like, okay, my dumbass does that. I would have told them the cameras are going to be following me around in a few months. And so, of course, that never happens. because that's kind of the nature of the industry. And it's just now I look like an idiot because I'm telling my boss, like, yeah, I want to be on reality TV. And they're like, is that still happening? And I'm like, I don't know. And then they, you get asked all the time because people want to know. And I'm like, I don't know. I know nothing. And so it goes back to believe none of what you hear and half of what you see.
Where's Dave Meltzer when you need him? Playing Spain.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. That's a crazy story, man. And I just imagine that there, we could probably do a whole 2 hour on just stuff like that, that just, you know, the constant ribs and jokes, or, you know, ribs as you guys call them, and jokes and practical pranks and all that stuff.
Oh yeah. And then there's some that are kind of funny, and some that are just like just mean. I was never really into the stuff that was mean, but, you know, stuff that's just kind of a laugh, I think, is always fine. But I think sometimes too, when you're in the trenches, as we called it, because you're grinding every day to try to get somewhere, you have to do stuff like that to kind of keep your sanity to a degree. And, you know, like I said, it's a different type of life. Looking back on it now, when I'm pretty well away from the business and kind of living more of a civilian life, I guess, sometimes I think back to the stuff that we went through and I'm like, good Lord, like, why did we do that? You know, but it was just kind of, that was the lifestyle we were in, you know, like sleeping on floors and, you know, sleeping in buildings on mats, you know, because we didn't want to get a hotel room that night. Like there's no money. And so everyone's broke and you're basically doing everything you can to squeeze as much out of a dollar as possible. It was just a very, very difficult life. And, you know, I've talked to people about it. And like, if your real job suggested you do what you do in wrestling, like, hey, drive across country for $50, you'd look at them and be like, no, absolutely not. For some reason in wrestling, that seems like a great idea. And we all did it, and people continue to do it. It's just, it's a very, very difficult industry to be a part of. And that kind of goes beyond people not even really understanding it. It's just, there's so much to it, and trying to make, you know, a career out of it where you're actually making legitimate money. I mean, it's definitely possible, but it's not easy to get to that point.
It sounds like there's kind of like a, I mean, I don't know. Cause I, like I say, that's about my one brush with wrestling ever, but it sounds like there's kind of this thing where I saw an interview with Paul Stanley from Kiss, and they were talking to him about what advice would he give to somebody who is trying to break into music today, you know? And his response was basically that if somebody was trying to break into rock and roll right now, they wouldn't want his advice because they already know exactly what it takes and what it's, in other words, there's no half stepping. If you're going to become a rock and roll star or a pro wrestler, you have to have, like, this is all I ever wanted and I'm going for it. And if it's anything less than that, you got no chance.
Yep. Pretty accurate. Right? Oh yeah. And I think that's the thing that's motivating, is like, you know, you always have to know someone's working harder than you. You know, someone's doing, there were times when we did this run of shows there where we were going to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, like once a month. And at that, where we were living in Missouri, it's like an 8 to 9 hour drive, I think, to get there. So we leave Friday night, get there early Saturday morning, sleep in, we do the show, then we'd leave right after the show was over. And so we would get back to town like 8, sometimes 9 a.m. And me and another guy would work a double shift at the restaurant we were at. So we'd get there at 10:30. So, I mean, no sleep really. And then we'd get there like, well, we need you guys to go ahead and work the closing shift because you had Friday and Saturday off. I'm like, well, we didn't have it off. We were out of town wrestling. And so, yeah, it was just brutal, man. Like, it was like some of the stuff we went through. And that was the thing, is we couldn't argue too much about the closing shift because we needed the money. We were broke, you know, like any money we made went to gas. And it was a very, very difficult life to live.
And so I guess to tie that all together, it kind of sounds like, because they know you have to have that obsessive drive, that pretty much if you don't have that, you're going to drop out. And if you don't drop out, then they know that they've got you because you're one of the guys that's got that drive, and they can kind of just keep dangling the carrot, right?
It was for sure, 100%. And I think that's where WWE, they've never been super aggressive with signing indie talent, because if a guy is willing to – travel up and down the U.S. for no money, they can pretty much snag him at any point, right? Like, there's no...
Oh, that makes sense.
Like you said, yeah. there's no carrot to dangle there. They can pay this guy very little and he'll come do it because that's his dream. Whereas signing like legitimate athletes from the Olympics or the NBA or something or the NFL, it's a little bit different because they have something to compare it to. They're like, oh no, we just came from the NFL. We're making this much. We're not signing for that. It's a totally different mindset, but it's the truth. And you know, the difference is a lot of those guys may not have the same passion as someone who's in pro wrestling has. So I don't know. Like, again, I can't venture a guess why WWE does the things that they do, but it is, I don't know, it's a different lifestyle for sure.
That makes sense, man. I always enjoy the insight on that stuff. Like I say, you can go online, you can go on Twitter, and there's all kinds of guys on there that'll tell you anything about pro wrestling you want to know, and some cases you don't want to know, but
right.
Very few, if any of them, have ever had anything to do with it. So it's cool. And I really appreciate having you on because you're one of the guys that's actually done it.
Oh yeah, man. I could tell stories for days. So I've definitely lived, I always try to tell people like, cause I'll see someone from high school and they'll mention someone from high school. And I'm thinking like, dude, I've lived three lifetimes since then. I don't know. Like, I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Yeah. So what was that? I mean, I don't even know. That may be personal or off topic of something you want to get into, but not. I'm not asking about numbers or anything like that, obviously, but just the process of you go to the school, you're doing your thing. How does the NXT thing come about? What's the process like as far as, does somebody just hit you up and say, hey, we got a contract, you want it, yes or no? Or, you know, was there, I'm sure there's more to it than that, but if you can, what was that like?
Yeah. Okay. So basically around 2008, Harley started sending me up to WWE as an extra. And if anyone's not familiar with that process, they're in town, they'll call different people. I think now it's like a sign-in thing online, but at the time they would call Harley and say, hey, we're going to be in town on this date and this date for Raw and SmackDown. We need six guys. One guy had gotten hurt about a month before that. So he pulled out. And so Harley asked me if I wanted to go. And I'm like, course. And so they pay you a little bit to be there, you get catering, so it's kind of an interesting thing to obviously to see it all and to be a part of it. So I got to go there. I was my rookie year, honestly. I was 2008. I just debuted like back in March. This is July or August that I'm there. And and I remember very specifically that first night I was there was actually the angle where CM Punk cashed in the Money in the Bank and on Edge. And we came out later as security and held John Cena while JBL punched him. So, and then at the end of the show, CM Punk wrestled JBL in the main event. And we were at ringside while John Cena and Crime Time came out and beat us up. So that was kind of my introduction to that. But I had been going to do extra work and I did one dark match and like nothing really came of it. It's like, okay. And so like nothing really was happening. You'd kind of get in there and roll around and sometimes they'd look at you, sometimes not so much, kind of dependent on the show that they were doing. And I show up one day and William Regal had kind of taken charge of the extras. And so I always liked Regal. He was very straightforward, which is something you don't get in wrestling too often. He told us, he goes, guys, tonight's Monday Night Raw. It's a live show. We're not going to get in the ring at all, but we're going to talk. I was like, okay. He's like, tomorrow is Tuesday. It's taped, which is SmackDown. He goes, we're going to get in the ring a little bit. Like, yes, sir. Sounds good. And so he talked to us for a few hours, really told us a lot of information, which was great. And the next day we got in the ring a little bit and I had been to the WWE at this point, probably six or seven times. So I was kind of, I don't want to say like not excited. I was excited to be there, but I was not at all like thinking anything was going to happen. And this is like fall of 2011. So I'm there and work around with one of our guys a little bit and get out of the ring and nothing is said. He tells us to take a little break and he comes back. He goes, well, I want, there's four of us there. He's like, I want you guys to team up. I want you guys to team up. You're going to wrestle the Twins. The Twins were the Usos, which were at the time not really featured that much. So they were a lot more underneath than they are now, of course. And so the first two guys do their match, and it was fine. Then we did our match, and the guy I was teaming with ended up kind of having a altercation with one of the Usos, and I'm just like, oh god, I hope we don't all end up in a fight, just because not good, just not a good situation.
Yeah,
it obviously for a multitude of reasons. And so they ended up not having any issues with me, which I didn't give them any reason to. So we got through the match. Regal comes up to me and he was like, you are great as a heel, but you need a lot of work as a babyface. And I was like, no, I agree. And of course, a lot of my babyface work was probably not good, because I kept thinking like we're going to end up in a fight in this match, because I wasn't sure what was happening. And he goes, I want you to wrestle George tonight. You okay with that? And I'm like, sure. But I have no idea who George is. Well, George was Brodus Clay. So he's like, you're going to be on Superstars 3 to 4 minutes. And just get with him. I was like, okay. And so I went and talked to him. He was the coolest guy in the world. He made sure I understood what a squash match was. And I was like, no, I get it. I know why I'm here. And he goes, okay, well, you'd be surprised how many people don't get that. I'm like, no, I understand. We did what I did to the best of my ability, what I thought that they wanted that night. And Brodus was happy with it. Arn Anderson was the agent. He was happy with it. We had a game plan in mind. He kind of made some tweaks. We incorporated the tweaks. Afterwards, Regal came up to me and shook my hand. He goes, that's exactly what we wanted. I was like, thank you, sir. I appreciate the opportunity. And did not hear a thing again. So I'm thinking, for the first time in like 3 years, I've made some real progress. I'm like, okay, so things are good. Well, 2011 rolls on. We had another Harley Race camp, and I'm kind of running things at this point for Harley, because I'd been there for a few years. And Regal was our guest. Me and him got a chance to talk. He kind of asked me what I wanted to do in the business. And I was like, well, I want to be in Florida. That's where I want to go. I want to go to, it was FCW at the time. He's like, okay, well, I can get you a look there. But he said, that's all I can do. It's up to you. And I was like, I understand. I just want an opportunity. He's like, okay, I'll make that happen for you. And I was like, okay. And so I'm thinking, hey, I'm going to get a tryout. All is well. And so long story long, sorry, there's a lot of details here, but I don't end up hearing anything from anybody at WWE. I'm talking to Harley, and he's kind of having a lot of memory issues at the time. So I'm like, did anyone call? Did anyone say anything? He's just like, I don't have anything written down, so I don't think so. And I'm like, oh god. So I get him to call Regal. No, I'm sorry. That's not yet. That I'm getting ahead of myself. January rolls around, and the Royal Rumble was in St. Louis. This is 2012. So I get on the list to be an extra. I see William Regal there. You'll say hello to him. He's like, how you doing? And I was like, I'm good. He goes, how was Florida? And I was like, I haven't been. And he was like, you haven't been? I was like, no, I haven't. He's like, okay. And he walks away, and that's all I hear about it. I'm like, all right. Oof. So I just kind of move on. We do our thing in the ring. I end up wrestling a guy who was having a horrible match with someone. Like, one of the worst matches I've ever seen live. And that's saying something, because I've seen some doozies. And so Regal grabs me and he goes, can you work a match with this guy? And I was like, yeah, sure. And so I end up getting a passable match out of the guy, which I think impressed him even more. And so at the end of the 2 days we were there, or 2 or 3 days, he was kind of standing off to himself. So I'm like, I'm just going to go talk to him. I went up and talked to him, and I was like, I appreciate everything this week. And if there's anything you think I need to do or work on, he's like, everything was great. He said, you were supposed to get a tryout in December, and that didn't happen. I put you in for it, and the call was never made. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, I just didn't know if I didn't miss anything, or Harley didn't pass information. He goes, nope, a call was never made. And he goes, but you'll hear something soon. And I was like, okay, I appreciate it. And we shook hands, and he kind of walked away. But I have no idea what you'll hear something soon means by any stretch. So keeping score at home, I did the dark match in like September of 2011. I saw Regal at the camp in like October or November of 2011. I'm now at the Royal Rumble weekend in late 2012, or late January 2012. But I feel like things are on track. So about every month from there, I have Harley call Regal to get an update. And he keeps telling us, oh no, everything's good. Everything is great. But he's not actually saying it, which I think is probably he probably can't legally say it. Mm-hmm. And I actually got the call like 2 days before WrestleMania in 2012, which was the Rock Cena WrestleMania, from John Laurinaitis. I got a call from him. It lasted less than 1 minute. And he's just like, hey, want to sign you? Send you to FCW? Don't quit your job. We'll be in touch soon. And that was basically the phone call, with some more information about money and things of that nature and dates. But basically that was it. And I was just like, wow, that happened. And so it took like 3 months from that phone call to actually get there. So when I got there in FCW, my first day was July 2nd. So if you think about it, September of 2011 to July 2nd, 2012, before from like my first positive interaction to actually stepping foot in FCW, it was almost a year. It was pretty wild.
Wow. Was your employment from appearance to appearance, or was it like a contract for a period of time with the NXT?
So when I signed with at the time it was FCW, it transitioned to NXT within a few months. My contract never changed, but basically I was signed to they call them booking contracts. It's hard to explain exactly what it is. It's basically an agreed upon amount of money once a week, which was not much. And that's basically what you're going to be paid to be in the farm system. Now, when you go to the main roster, the contract changes where you get paid for everything. You get paid for your matches, you get paid for appearances, all that stuff. Developmental, it's not the case. It's just a weekly one-time check. Whether you work television or not, this is what you get paid. And like at that time, there was no, like, guys now in NXT have action figures. I think they get paid for that. From what I understand, action figures and video games are completely separate. You're going to pay directly from Mattel, or I guess it was, I don't know if it's 2K that makes the games. I'm not even sure, but it's, yeah. That's all separate. Merchandising is separate. And what they get now in the main roster, best as I understand it from friends that have told me, it's like it's a downside guarantee, which is X amount of dollars, right? So maybe like it's 100,000 as a nice round number. That's what your downside guarantee is. Meaning that will be the least amount of money you will get paid. And so everything works towards your downside. And so what would happen is you would get, if you work a pay-per-view match, say that's $5,000. Well, that all goes to your downside. So at the end of the year, if you've made $95,000, they would just write you a check for $5,000 to bring you up to the $100,000. If you made more, then that's just what you made. That was actually where I'm sure a lot of you, the listeners, have heard a while back when they were having issues with guys doing Twitch streaming and Cameo. What WWE wanted to do is take control of those and work that money into their downside. So basically, if you got a Cameo request, that money went to WWE and WWE gave you a cut but put it on your downside guarantee, which that's why a lot of them did not like that, as you can imagine, because that was extra money that they were earning, and now WWE wants to take a little bit. And it's like, oh, wait a minute, that's not how that goes.
Yeah, that's a tricky one to me, and I know a lot of people are pro, they should be able to do that, and what's WWE or anybody else have to say about it? And I guess to me, it almost doesn't feel like a one-size-fits-all, and what I mean by that is there's absolutely people that kind of have a brand or have a recognition with or without WWE, or maybe they already had it before, sure. But then there's also guys that WWE, for lack of better terms, made, right? So
right.
That to me, that the latter kind of gets a little gray. Like you're making money off of a character that we
right
gave you the platform to make. I don't know. I mean, obviously I'm not an entertainer of any kind, but that's an interesting one that seems to be pretty controversial.
It's no different, I think, than almost any job. I'm sure any person working that has a regular job, their company has made decisions that they didn't agree with. I think at the end of the day, what it's going to do is if WWE tries to get their hands into their Twitch streams or Cameo or any of that, people just are going to opt to not do it. Because they were doing it on their downtime, you know, in their personal life. But if it's part of their, you know, now it's part of your job, quote unquote, I could see people just not wanting to do it altogether. But again, yeah, a lot of that I'm not super familiar with because I've never done any of that stuff. And it never came up when I was there. I do know you're an independent contractor with the WWE, so you're not an employee. So that's where I think the gray area falls in, because technically speaking, you don't actually work for them. You're an independent contractor, but they tell you where to go and what to do. So that's where it also is sticky. Like, these guys don't have insurance or benefits. So I don't know. It's just one of those weird things where I guess
truly is one of a kind, huh?
Yeah, I mean, both sides have a point, but if it's enough for Adam Cole to not re-sign to go somewhere else so he can continue to do it, that's pretty telling of it, too.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be, you know, in the 80s and probably the 90s, with the exception of WCW, it was WWE or bust. I mean, if you wanted to be a pro wrestler, I would imagine that was it. Like, if I have a chance, I got to be there. And now that doesn't seem to really be the case anymore. And
yeah.
They might have to loosen up a little bit on some of that demand, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the thing about it is they're used to being the only game in town. And when that's not really the case, well, you know, ultimately money's important, but, you know, at the same time, I've always thought this was interesting that no one talks about this. Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, I both heard them say on numerous occasions, they were like, people always think we left because of the money. They were like, it was the dates. He said, yeah, Turner was guaranteed money and that was great. But they said, we could have made that with Vince, but we're working 350 dates. This is 120, a whole lot less. So it's like, yeah, more home time. I totally get that. And I think, you know, if anyone here listening, if your regular job, if you could work half as many hours and make more money, who wouldn't jump on that?
Yeah, I guess we all have our tipping point, and certainly when I was younger, I might just only be thinking about the money, but at this stage in my life, yeah, man, I'll take a pay cut if I could have a couple days off.
Sure.
I want to talk to you. You kind of touched on Travis Fowler and the TB Toycast and how that came about, and I definitely want to ask you about your other projects. Before I get to that, though, I did want to ask you, in the change of the guard with wrestling, I mean, obviously, you don't have to be in the business, quote unquote, to know that something is definitely shifting with WWE. And, you know, you go online and you hear people say, oh, it's this, it's that. They're going to sell to Disney. They've been saying that for months now. And I don't know what it is. And I don't espouse to pretend to know. But just as somebody who spent some time, what are your thoughts? Is it just like, are people asleep at the company, or do you think they're getting ready to sell, or what? I'm not asking you to say I know for sure what it is, but I mean, you have your theory, I guess, is what I'm asking.
My theory has shifted a few times, but yeah, I definitely think something's off, right? I think that's pretty obvious to most people that are paying attention. Something's different than it used to be. I know people I've heard people say online, like, well, you know, them releasing all this talent hasn't even changed their ratings. I'm like, no, of course it hasn't. But why did they sign him to begin with? Like, what was the reason to sign that many talents that you could dispose of over 100 talents without really changing anything? Like, that's, I think the weird part to me is, like, why would you even sign him to begin with if you had no plans to do anything with him? I think what it comes down to is, with the industry ever changing, things will always kind of be different. And, you know, with AEW popping up, like, it became this new fun brand, right? And it was but I didn't see, when they started up, I didn't see Big Show and Mark Henry and Sting jumping over. I didn't see Christian jumping over. Like, Jericho kind of made sense, and, you know, a lot of the other guys, but CM Punk, I'm like, okay, I get that one. Bryan Danielson, I didn't see him jumping over. But at the same time, like, who's the first AEW guy that's going to jump to WWE? Cause that's going to happen at some point. It hasn't yet, but it will. I think all in all, with what WWE is doing, I don't know. I do think they're playing a chess game and they have a reason for what they're doing. What that is, I don't know. And I don't know if it's a power play within the company where maybe Triple H is signing guys and thinking, like, ooh, I'll sign, you know, Adam Cole and Keith Lee and Karrion Kross and all these guys to big deal, or maybe not big deals, but to deals because they're the future of the business. And then you get to the main roster and Vince is like, I don't get it. I don't know that. I can't imagine, like, when they released Bray Wyatt, I've made the statement before. It reminded me of, like, if WWE were to release The Undertaker in 1998, like,
yeah.
What? Like, that one just blew my mind. I felt like the guy had so much left to give.
Yeah.
It didn't really make any sense to me. And, you know, certain guys I kind of got, like Braun Strowman kind of baffled me. Not that I thought he was going to be a huge asset to any other company, but I thought, man, that guy, they've spent so much time making this guy. I don't know why they would let him go now, but I guess to try to answer your question, I'm not really sure if they're trying to sell or what's happening, but you know, Baines had a theory, and maybe he's not wrong here. His theory was that he thinks Vince doesn't want the WWE to succeed without him.
And oh,
so he's trying to kind of bury it ahead of time, and maybe he's right. I don't know. Like it's hard to understand a theory because they've released so many talents this year and last year too, that I don't totally understand what their thinking is or what their thought process is, but. And to me, like they let go a lot of guys, it would be like what I would consider their future. So I don't know. It's hard to say. One theory I did have, and could be wrong here, but that theory was that Vince was trying to starve Tony Khan and release so many talents that Tony would sign all of them and eventually be in over his head financially and have to shut his doors.
Yeah, but that one doesn't make as much sense to me, but.
Yeah, but honestly, I don't know. Like, it's weird. Like, I think most people watching, none of us really know. We're just kind of all at a loss.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right about the comparisons. I mean, I know a lot of people hate Braun Strowman and thought he was talentless and just, you know, talk a bunch of trash about the guy. To me, he's one of the few guys that harkens back to the 80s, the big monster guys, you know, I mean, sure. He's just one of the, like, if you dropped him in the 80s and one of those rosters, it's like, okay, here's another one of these guys where there doesn't seem to be too many of those guys around. Like Steiner's kid, I forgot his name, is in there now. And that, like that, is it Wardlow in AEW or something?
Right, yeah.
Some of these guys are like, you know, kind of going back to that time period where these guys were really big and powerful. And to me, as a kid, like, you know, sitting in the crowd, if one of those guys walked down the aisle and turned and looked at me, I'm like making that big-eyed face and sitting down and shutting up. And I think that element's kind of been lost. And so, anyway, I kind of got on the side tangent. But with Strowman, he was a world champion, right? I mean,
right.
It'd be like after the Saturday night's main event match if they just released Paul Orndorff. Like, yeah, he's right. Gone.
It seemed like a odd person to let go, and I don't know. Like, but then there's guys that they don't use that they've kept, like Ricochet. They kept him. Like, and that's not a knock on him. But it's just like, you're not using him, but you kept him. But you also probably know that AEW would snatch him up right away.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. Well, it's very strange, but I mean, WWE hasn't done those mass exodus cuts in a while, it seems like, but over the exception of the last couple of years, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's hard to say what's going to happen with that company moving forward, but I think one thing is for sure, like they didn't need all that talent. So maybe it was not a bad idea to let some of them go.
Yeah. And you kind of opened my eyes and turned me on to some of these different thoughts about wrestling that from your insider perspective that I didn't have before. And kind of one of the things I was thinking about was like, okay, they say, you know, they cut these guys and how could you do that around the holidays? And it's, you know, they cut these talented people and it's like, people get really upset about it, but it's one of those weird things about wrestling again, like you always say, where they don't do that when, like, if I audition for a play or a movie and I don't get the part, nobody jumps on Twitter and says, they cut Tim during the holidays. How could they do that? Or, you know, the NFL, all these guys go in and try out for the team. A bunch of them get cut. Don't make it.
Yeah. Baseball. That's just the nature of that industry.
Yeah. You're going after a very sought after position. There's only a few spots and this is what happens, right?
Well, and also too, if you think back to the, you know, the 90s, I mean, how many guys were there more than like 2 or 3 years? That was kind of an average run. I mean, you look at Bray Wyatt. I think he debuted in what, 2013, but even before that, he was Husky Harris. But I think he debuted as Bray Wyatt in 2013. He was let go in 2021, so he had what, an 8-year-ish run? Like, that's pretty long.
Yeah.
So maybe they're kind of going back to that, and they're like, you know what? Let these guys leave and some of them will bring back. Because I could see Braun Strowman coming back. I could see, in the right circumstance, Karrion Kross coming back. A lot of these guys I could see returning at some point. And, you know, I mean, you were kind of talking off the air. I was like, there's something about that when a guy leaves and he comes back. It's a huge moment. So I wouldn't be shocked if we don't see, like, someone special in the Royal Rumble this year. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked anyway.
Yeah. A lot of people recognize your voice and recognize you from your podcast with Bane, the Breaker and Bane Power Hour, which is a staple in my rotation. And hopefully, I'm sure it is for most people that are listening to this, but how long have you known Bane? Since you were a child, or how does that relationship, you know, where does that go back to, or how did that start?
I always joke about this because he doesn't seem to remember how we kind of became friends, but we had our first time I met him, we were in seventh grade and we were in the science class and we were kind of friendly with each other, but didn't know much about him. Anyway, I'm wearing a Legion of Doom t-shirt at school because I thought that was awesome. And Bane sees it and he's like, cool shirt. I'm like, oh, thanks, man. He's like, does it say like, oh, what a rush on the back? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, this guy must like wrestling. And so anyway, we kind of just started talking wrestling every day in that class. You know, that it kind of became the thing where we just talk wrestling. And we ended up being friends all the way through high school. And then, of course, you know, after high school, he did his own thing with music. I did my own thing with wrestling. But we were always friends. It's just one of those things where we didn't talk as much. And I moved back to town and started talking and anything. Sorry, I was getting a text there, but we were communicating and kind of talking and catching up and stuff. And I had done a podcast with another guy. And so I hit him up. I was like, hey man, have you ever thought about podcasting? He's like, I actually have. I've been wanting to do like a music podcast. I was like, okay. I was like, well, the reason I say that, I was like, with you being in music and me being a pro wrestler, but you being a wrestling fan, I feel like that might be kind of fun if we did a podcast just kind of talking wrestling from our different perspectives. And we didn't really have a game plan going in other than we thought it would be fun. And we started that in 2014 and still going today, just hit over 400 episodes, which is crazy, I guess. But it's been a fun hobby, you know, like we've grown to find so many different people. Like you're a good example of that. And Jeff and Scott and Eric and Barry and Drew Vinsel and so many others, people that we've met, you know, through this, is really cool. So it's been a fun ride, man. And we both love it. And it's kind of a staple of our routine.
Yeah. I don't think you guys necessarily get the credit you deserve. I mean, with your episode volume, that kind of speaks for itself as far as I'm concerned, and just how much you guys have done to bring people together. And it's kind of like this weird band of outlaw guys that, you know, that were all independent wrestling figure collectors that probably didn't know any collectors in their real life. And
right,
you know, through these podcasts that we've all been kind of brought into one common building, which is pretty cool.
It is cool, man. And I think that's what's fun about it is like we've met a whole community of individuals, you know. And I never sought out early on to think, hey, we'll be friends with all these other podcasts. But I think it's really cool that we've been able to do that.
Yeah. And props to you guys for that, too. I wanted to mention that is there are podcasts out there that are, for whatever reason, very competitive or, you know, territorial. And you guys have never been that way. And you've been real helpful for me personally. I was having some audio technical stuff and, you know, you were candid about it, that you didn't go to like college as an engineer for audio stuff, but you were nice enough to help me, and I appreciate that, and you've helped a lot of other people. So yeah, I definitely am grateful that you guys opened your arms to me and invited me into the community and made me a part of it. So thank you very much for that.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. I think that's the thing with recording is it's so It can be so difficult when things don't go well, you know, or you have an audio issue or whatever it might be. It can just be a lot. But I think ultimately, like, this is a hobby, and I've had so many people like, hey, I'm starting a podcast. I'm like, awesome, do it. And any advice? I'm like, well, have fun with it, but it's a lot more work than you think. That's what I always try to tell people. And like, oh, yeah, yeah, but it'll be fun. And I'm like, you say that until you get to the point where, you know, the audio is not working, or you're trying to upload it and that's not working, or the file's not transferring, whatever it might be. All that insight stuff that people don't think about is like, it can be a lot of work. And at times you can probably look at yourself and be like, what am I doing? Like, why am I so stressed about this? But ultimately, like, I try to always make sure it's a fun thing I'm doing. It's a hobby. I'm not stressing myself out about it. I'm just having fun. And I've seen a lot of guys kind of start shows and then end up not doing them too long because it does end up being a lot of work and trying to come up, like with your show, you know, obviously is an interview type show, which I do that as well, but that can be tough because you start looking at the Rolodex and be like, okay, well, now who do I have on? Because that can be an issue too. So, but ultimately, like I try to tell anyone who wants to get into podcasting or is in podcasting, just have fun with it. If you're talking about something you're not enjoying, change it up. You know, if you want to talk wrestling, talk wrestling. If you decide, like, I know we did that with Power Hour. There was TV shows that were on at the time that we enjoyed, or movies or whatever it might've been. I'm like, why can't we talk about this? We can. There's no reason. There's no one telling us we have to talk wrestling. So that's when we started incorporating movies and television and stuff like that. So it's like, if a new movie or toy line or something comes out and we want to talk about it, let's talk about it. No one can tell us we can't. And I think once we did that and we realized there's no parameters, this is our show. No one's telling us what to do. No one's editing it for us. It's our deal. We can do whatever we want. I think that's when it really became a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned the parameters. I mean, I've had people say like, well, you don't put out an episode every week. And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, you really need to, if you want this to work, if you want it to be successful. And I'm like, well, I don't, if you're talking about like monetarily successful or follows or likes or whatever, I'm not interested in that. I'm doing this for my friends and my family. And I wanted to have episodes with people like yourself that I like and I enjoy talking to and that I can reflect back on someday. So yeah, it's kind of this weird thing where there's like these rules where, you know, you got to put an episode out consistently at the same time on the same day and
right,
every week. And I'm going, well, it's on demand. So I don't know about you, but I rarely listen to something the second it pops. I mean, sometimes
right,
it happens to catch me or I've been looking forward to a certain episode for whatever reason, but typically it's kind of like TV. It's appointment based. And I'm like, okay, I got a few hours to burn. I'm going to catch up on Power Hour, you know?
I actually do when I listen, and I don't, people may not know this, but I actually will listen to two or three episodes of one show at a time. Tales from the Estate's actually my favorite to do that. I'll binge listen to like three or four episodes. And it's just that's something I enjoy doing. But like you said, it's on-demand audio. You can listen however you want to. You can pause it. You can rewind it. I mean, it's always there unless they choose to delete it. But so that's why I always think it's one of the best forms of entertainment is podcasting, because it's always there. You know, you can listen in your car while you work out. I mean, I know there for a while, there's a lot of guys that would listen to our show while they mowed the lawn during the summer. And I thought that was pretty cool. Cause I'm like, hey, I've mowed the yard and listened to a bad podcast and had to like stop my mower to turn it off. So the fact that we're good enough to listen to people mow, that's a pretty big compliment.
Yeah. That's the ultimate compliment, man. Yeah. I just try not to flood the market. I know everybody's got a million podcasts to choose from, and I try to just keep mine to, I don't want to get to the point where I'm just forcing stuff out just because I have to keep a schedule or whatever. So,
sure.
And then, you know, it's Fake Right. That's kind of your, I guess that one was before the TB Toycast, right?
Yeah. I launched both of them in 2021. More or less what I was doing is I was doing interviews with people like yourself on Breaker and Bane's Power Hour, but to not make the show too long, I would split an hour interview into like 2 30-minute halves. And I kind of just got to the point where I was like, I felt like it killed the momentum to stop me and Bane to go to our interview and then go back to me and Bane. It was like, well, what if I just did my own interview show? And it was just an hour long ish show with different guests. And it leaves me and Bane more time to talk about what we want to talk about instead of being rushed on time, because we didn't want our show to be too long. And so that's where that came from. And in doing that, I'm like, well, I need a name for it. And so I'm like, okay, well, what do I call it? Like, you know, Breaker Talks Wrestling or Breaker's Wrestling Podcast. Like, I'm like, I need something that's like, that hits you. I wanted something to kind of hit you in the guts, I guess. And I was talking to some people, kind of throwing out ideas. And finally I was like, what if I called it, you know, it's fake, right? And most everybody was on board. They were like, dude, that's a cool name. And I'm like, right. Because I think most people have been asked or have been told, I guess, like, hey, you like wrestling? You know, it's fake, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Almost like it's like this big secret that only you don't know. And almost everybody's got some type of story involving that. And so that's kind of where that idea came from. But I had a lot of apprehension of calling it that, obviously, because I'm like, man, that might rub some people the wrong way or whatever. But I think most people have gotten it. I've even gotten a lot of wrestlers who have really complimented that name. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy with that. And the TB Toycast, like I was telling you before, that kind of just stemmed from me and Travis already doing this. We were already talking about what's new and what we're excited for. And hey, you remember this old toy line? Oh, that was so cool. And no, I don't remember that. Oh, I just looked at the pictures. That was so cool. And I was like, dude, what if we made that a podcast? And Travis is a great example. I have never met him in person. I met him 100% through podcasting. And now me and him have a show. Like, that's, to me, that's what's so cool about all of this.
Yeah. There's a bunch of cool stories like that. And, you know, Scott and Jeff and I live probably 25 miles. Well, Scott and I live probably 25 miles apart. We've never met, but we text all the time. We talk all the time. And you just, yeah, you make these connections with people and we have that common thing. So yeah, I always get a, you know, when I was younger, I got the, you know, it's fake, right? And as I got older, you know, my dad would always razz me with, you know, oh, they just happened to have a Thanksgiving dinner sitting there next to the ring that they could smash somebody's face in on them.
Of course, right.
It's a little harder to defend that one.
Sure.
Or they just happened to have a leaf blower under the ring or whatever the thing was. Or a
fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
You never know. I guess there could have been a fire, but yeah.
The same people that are saying this stuff are heading to Las Vegas to go see David Copperfield.
Right. Exactly. And that's, to me, what I've always tried to explain to people, like, cause wrestling is entertainment. Like, it's not. And I have equated it to this, like, being a pro wrestler, I think when people see me and I'm relatively a normal human being, it's almost like, oh, you're a pro wrestler, like WWE. And I'm like, yeah. Wow, that's so cool. And then you can just tell they have a million questions, but when they know nothing about it, those questions usually get kind of odd. And I equate it to, like, I've told my friends, I was like, if I lived next door to a guy and I found out he was like a lion tamer at the circus, I would have a lot of questions, because that's kind of like, wow, really? Like, that's wild. But I think it's just one of those things where when you don't know anything about something, and you know, with any sport, baseball, football, basketball, whatever it might be, most people have played at least for fun or probably as a kid. So they understand. They understand baseball's not easy. Football's not easy. Basketball's not easy. It takes talent to do it. Pro wrestling's different because it's entertainment. Because, like you said, the Thanksgiving Day food fights that they always would have on SmackDown and stuff, all that. So they see that, I think, and they're like, oh, that's just ha-ha and fun and games. When it's like, well, there's that, but what they're doing in the ring is very dangerous and can be very life altering if you're not careful, or, you know, and accidents happen all the time. But it's one of those things where I think sometimes people can't see the other side of it, maybe, and they hear it's not real or it's fake or whatever. And they don't, it's like, they can't comprehend that just because something is a show, that doesn't mean that this isn't dangerous or life threatening.
Yeah, and I think Jim Ross hit it on the head of how do you fake falling off a 20-foot ladder or whatever. I think I probably botched that line, but yeah, that sums it up pretty well. One of the things I like to do on my show is ask my guests what they found in the wild, or, you know, wrestling figures as far as, you know, in your local Target or Walmart or Amazon or wherever you do your shopping. Have you picked up any cool figures lately?
Not really. The only wrestling figures I'm really collecting right now are the AEWs. Well, I take that back. I actually got an order in from Ringside a couple days ago with Unrivaled Series 7 Lance Archer and FTR. So I got those guys in.
Oh, cool.
So that's something new. And, you know, I get regular shipments from Mr. Jason Wolf as part of his Wolf Club. So I just got in Brother Love recently, as well as a couple of other customs. So
I saw that online, the picture of it. That looks so good.
It's a really cool thing. And he's like, he's figured out how to digitally sculpt, which is how he was able to make that, where he kind of made his own parts, which that's kind of a game changer for him. That's where it's like, wow, there's no limits to what you're doing now. So I'm excited to see what he has coming up for 2022, because I'm sure he'll really be able to hit it hard with some cool stuff. But yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm always hitting Walmart and Target, kind of seeing the same stuff. Right now, nothing really new, I guess. But you know, I'm always looking to seeing if there's something fun out there.
Sure. The Lance Archer looks pretty good. I haven't found that one yet myself, but I'm glad to see him back in too. He seems like a guy that had something to offer that for whatever reason just didn't stick in the States anyway, and it's kind of cool to see him back.
No doubt about it. And I think this is only his second figure. He had a TNA Toy Biz back in the day, but that was it.
I appreciate you, Brian. I've been a longtime listener of your podcast, and I enjoy what you and Bane do and what you do on your own and what you're doing with Travis now. I appreciate you having me as a guest on your podcast. And
for sure, man.
Earlier on, when I first started messaging with you, I knew you were a keeper when we were talking about the quote that you use now to end your podcast, the Johnny Valentine. I didn't know who said that, but I had heard it. And then you smartened me up and said, oh, that was Johnny Valentine. And then I just kind of smile every week now when I listen to your podcast and I hear you close with that. It's like this weird, you know, takes me back to when I first met you.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I thought that was a fitting quote. If anyone doesn't know, it's I cannot make you believe pro wrestling is real, but I sure as hell can make you believe that I am. And I feel like that's pretty telling for what pro wrestling is, at least to my experience. Because people always may believe wrestling's a show or it's not real or whatever it is, but around someone specific, you can definitely make anyone a believer. That's definitely always something I've thought. So I thought that quote was fitting for what the show is, and everyone seems to dig it. So it's kind of become a cool little sign off for me.
Yeah. And ultimately maybe that's the ultimate answer to anybody who says, you know, it's fake, right? It's like,
Yeah, I agree. You know?
And they'd probably look at you sideways like, this guy's not going to haul off and hit me in the face, is he? Maybe I better shut up and go away.
Well, that's the thing you got to understand about pro wrestlers. They're a little bit off anyway, or they wouldn't have gotten the business. So be careful when you take your chances like that.
We mentioned all three of your podcasts, but if you want to go ahead and just recap those, where people can find you on social media.
So Breaker and Bane's Power Hour is every Sunday. You know, It's Fake Right is every Monday, and because I need at least three podcasts always, the TB Toy Cast drops every Thursday. So at Brian Breaker ODR is my Twitter handle, or at Brian Breaker on Instagram. And then, of course, BBPH918 for Breaker and Bane, and at TB Toy Cast on all social media for that one. But you can find pretty much anything from my personal Twitter account. I always try to retweet everything that I put out there so that it's easy to find. But yeah, you can find them on, I believe, on all podcasting platforms. So I personally am always an iTunes user, but I know a lot of people like Spotify and other apps. So I know it's on, I think it's on all of them. I haven't heard of it not being on any. So, but there's usually a way to find them all.
Awesome. Again, Brian, it was an honor to have you on here. Big fan of you and your story and everything that you're doing in the podcast game and the wrestling figure community, Fig Life, all that. Before I let you go, I got two final things for you. True or false?
Okay.
You once went on a date with Tennille Dashwood while you were in NXT.
It wasn't a date. We did hang out a few times, but just as friends. I was very leery. Not that I wouldn't have, because I would have, but I was very leery of like dating within the company, as far as like what that could lead to. She's from Australia, as most people know, so she didn't have a car, and so I kind of gave her rides from time to time, just to random places and stuff, like to the gym or tanning and all that stuff that we had to do as wrestlers. And I was always leery of people's opinions of stuff, and I think she was too. So I don't think ever like dating ever really became a thought, I guess. Like, Yeah, I know specifically one time we were tanning and we were going to the tanning salon, which again, that's not an odd thing for us. And someone saw us there and I think they thought we were together, which we weren't. But I know, like, we went to a couple of movies together. We just went and saw, like, The Dark Knight Rises and maybe The Amazing Spider-Man. I'm not sure. And but it was not a date really or anything that felt like that. I mean, she paid her own way. I paid my own way. So yeah. it wasn't a big deal. But she's still a friend of mine. I'll text her every now and then. But that's really about it.
Yeah, just had to give you a rash and a ball busting on the way out the door.
Of course.
I guess the final tradition that I have is I like to ask my guests to pick a wrestling theme of their choosing, and we head out to the sunset on that music. So, Brian, you're up, man. Floor is yours.
So I knew this was coming because I listened to your show, and I'll tell you, there's a theme, and I don't think it's been on here. I don't remember it being chosen, but it's an underrated theme. And it's a banger, I think. And it didn't last long because his gimmick changed. But I'm going to go with Kona Crush.
Kona Crush, man. I love the deep track pull on that. And I love fact that you took the time to pick something different that hadn't been selected before, man. So that's a great one.
Thanks for having me on, man. This has been a blast.
Yeah, I enjoy it more than I can explain to you, man. And I appreciate you. We'll be in touch with you soon.
Sounds good, man.
Thanks, Brian. We'll be right back.
I want to thank Brian Breaker for coming on to my podcast and for allowing me to come on to his podcast. Had an awesome time talking to Brian. He's insightful for obvious reasons. He's a pro wrestler, and he's had a long-standing run as a podcaster, just entertaining shows that I listen to every week. And you should, too, if you haven't checked him out. Get over there and give a listen to Brian's podcast, The Power Hour with Big Underscore Bane, as well as the TB Toycast with Travis Fowler. And you know it's fake, right? Thank you, Brian. Before I get out of here, I want to give some shout-outs and some thank yous, starting, as always, with my buddy Drew Vinsel. And I haven't been on, haven't recorded in a while, haven't had a chance to say it publicly, but big love, big shout-outs to Drew and his wife, Caitlin, who are now the parents of twins, the future World Tag Team Champions, as it was. And I'm excited to talk to Drew again soon. We're going to make that happen when our schedules allow. But shout out to Drew. The guy's just, he's just an awesome guy. He's so thoughtful. He hooks people up in the community all the time, and just a positive guy. And I can't say enough about him. If you're not checking out his podcast, Tales from the Estate, over there, give it a listen. Estate Tales is their Twitter handle. They got shirts for sale. Just get over there and check it out. Check out Drew. Great guy. He's been a big influence for me and helped me dust this microphone off and get back on here. So shout out to you, Drew. Also like to give a shout out to the Wrestling Figure Database. These guys have the biggest website, the biggest collection of every single wrestling figure ever made. It just makes searching for figures that you have or want to have so easy. If you're not checking it out, why not? Get over there, support them. This site's massive. It's only going to get better and bigger as the years go on, and support them. Shout out Wrestling Figure Database. Shout out to the Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast, the longest running episodic wrestling figure podcast, and the ones that started the game and continue to run it. Scott's been on the podcast. Awesome dude. Check out his side, Project Drunk Wrestling History. And maybe one day Jeff will get on here. How do we get Jeff? Scott, you listening out there, can you help me get Jeff to come on the show? Shout out to both of you guys. Check out Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast. Shout out to my good buddy, good brother Mike, aka the Fig Hunter, and the whole Collectors Helping Collectors movement. I still see detractors out there, and it's, I don't get it, man. These guys are awesome. They've helped me out numerous times. I try to help them. That's what it's all about. So if you get a chance, get out there, be a part of the CHC hashtag, and help somebody find a figure they can't find, and it comes back to you full circle. So shout out Collectors Helping Collectors. I also want to give some shout outs to some friends of mine. Big love to Adam Baum, Cella Toys, Junk Shop Dog, Grenville, aka Hasbook, Figure Kingdom, Nate, aka Ring Skirts, Dobro, Nick Haddix, Steve Hoker, Matthew Goldberg, Rad Chad, Ralphie Vibes, Custom Toy Rings, Proving Grounds, and Curb Stomp Customs. All of your friendships mean the world to me, and I appreciate you guys. Without you guys, I don't have this podcast, and I've appreciated each and every one of your support and help, and thank you. Lastly, I just want to encourage everybody to try to be kind to each other. Do something nice for somebody just for the heck of it. I promise you, you'll feel better for it. Instead of taking, try giving. And that's my soapbox rant for today. That's it for me, guys. I went super long this week. Hope to be back sooner than later. And I hope that when I come back, you'll join me right here on Pulling Up a Chair. Thank you for listening to pulling up a chair with a chair shot. If you enjoyed it, please help put the show over by telling a friend and clicking the subscribe button on Anchor, Google, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. You will get instant notifications whenever a new show drops. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at achairshot. That's A-C-H-A-I-R-S-H-O-T. You will want to keep an eye on my socials in the coming weeks. Trust me. Feel free to leave questions or audio comments on the show page on Anchor FM's website or email them to me directly at achairshot@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again, and until next week, Bobby.
All good things must come to an end, right?
Well, every time changes
everything. And a friend in need is a pest.